Okay, guys. Don't usually talk about too many sports here on Conversate, but I have some opinions about a few leagues here, a couple of them. First of all, we're going to shift our focus to the WNBA. You guys recall in episode 23 with Armani, our friend Armani, who also has a pretty dope podcast of his own, The Men's Department. Check it out. Search it just like that. All major platforms. But anyway, so we brought up on that show that the WNBA has a major problem with the pay disparity between their players and just everybody else making money off of them, basically. So that reared its ugly head when the salary for Las Vegas Aces head coach Becky Hammon was revealed. It is revealed that she is making $1 million a year. So that in and of itself, great. Glad to see someone who was basically held out of the NBA head coaching ranks get the opportunity to coach a franchise that she used to play for, the WNBA, and also earn a seven-figure salary as a head coach. But only problem with that is that the max salary in the WNBA is $250,000. That's right. You heard right. Max salary. So the best players, a super max contract, if you will, and they actually have the nerve to call it that, super max contract in the WNBA is $250,000. So do you see the problem there? A coach makes four times as much as the highest paid player in the league. Can you imagine LeBron making $40 million in the NBA only for, I don't know, let's see, elite coach, Steve Kerr to make $160 million? Do you see the problem with that? You know, I'm not going to buy a full price ticket to see Steve Kerr coach. I pay to see LeBron James play. I see the player. I pay to see the players. I pay to see the players. Okay. So, WNBA. Okay. Like we mentioned in episode 23, you're operating this league as if you're hemorrhaging cash. Like, this is a huge risk. This is an upstart league. You guys have been doing this for 25 years. The WNBA has been around for 25 years. Okay. I don't know too many multi-billion dollar corporations that hang on to an investment for 25 years plus and deem it a risk. Okay. The WNBA isn't a charity, guys. I think that's what we need to kind of draw the straight line to. This isn't a charity. This isn't like, okay, the 30 NBA franchises have like this little sister program to help out less fortunate franchises in the WNBA. That's not how it works. A lot of these teams are independently owned now. I know it started out where the owner of an NBA franchise, if he, you know, so chose, could branch out a WNBA franchise. So the same owner of the NBA franchise owned the WNBA franchise. That's how it used to be for a long time. But a lot of these franchises now have independent owners. They're not playing in NBA arenas anymore. So you don't have that umbrella either or that tie to it. So I just really don't understand why the pay disparity is still as it is in the WNBA. I just don't understand. The ESPN pays the league what was $25 million, and that wasn't even the current year. I think that was the year before. $25 million to broadcast WNBA games, ESPN pays. So Lifetime also broadcasts games. There's also online coverage. And you can't forget gate, you know, box office gate and merchandise as well. It's all a money generator for the league. So unless you are just blitzing us with marketing, and we know that's not the case, because the WNBA players aren't marketed very well in comparison to other leagues. You can argue that for a variety of reasons, do you feel like female athletes are not as marketable as male athletes? I don't think you can make that case in today's media anymore. I feel like, you know, if you have an angle, people will dig it as long as you just put it out there. Just put it out there. I'd love to know more of these players' stories. I really do. Like one, Liz Cambage, who is an outstanding player for the Las Vegas Aces. So let's circle it back to the franchise in question. So Becky Hammon is the head coach of the Las Vegas Aces. And Liz Cambage is one of the best players on that team. So here is the axe that Liz has to grind, obviously. She's a player. She's an outstanding player. She has a WNBA record for points scored in the game. She scored 53 about 2 or 3 years ago. Great player. But she's only making $250,000 a year on a quote-unquote super max contract, okay? So her coach is now making four times as much as her. And she went on Twitter saying that she had a problem with it. She had a problem with how the league conducts their business. The fact that a lot of these Supermax players, and I can't imagine what anybody under Supermax is doing to kind of travel to games and stuff like that. But Liz Cambage revealed that she has to upgrade her own seats. You know, the WNBA, they fly commercial. Okay. So, you know, yeah, you can make the argument. They're not flying private planes like NBA players. But the fact that her job is not compensating her for her travel accommodations, or at least all of them, when she is the primary reason why they are making money, is baffling to me. Okay. So a lot of people will make this an argument of, well, the WNBA as a whole does not make as much money as the NBA as a whole, so therefore they deserve this treatment as far as the players making so little money. Now, I do agree that if the league is not generating as much money, then Liz Cambage is not getting $40 million a year. Okay? I agree with you on that. But what I disagree with is the players, and especially the prominent Supermax players, getting such a small share of the pie. If you took every WNBA player and gave them the max, Supermax, quote-unquote, $250,000 salary, paid them all, it would not be as much as what LeBron James rakes in a year. Okay? Think about that. It's mind-blowing. An entire league doesn't get paid what one NBA player gets paid. Now, again, you know, and there's plenty of people who are going to make this argument that the WNBA is not as marketable as the NBA, but when your league is getting $25 million from one TV contract, plus whatever they get in gates, receipts, merchandise, other TV contracts, you can't justify the max being a quarter of $1 million. I don't think you can. I really don't think you can. I hope that the Players Union and the WNBA finally makes a stand. And I know it's not easy because if you make a stand and they lock you out, there's a chance the WNBA doesn't exist anymore, that the owners will simply cut ties and the league won't exist and all these players will have to go play overseas like they did before the mid-90s. And that would be a shame. I just don't see basketball at large here in this country letting that happen. But at the same time, who knows the motives of some of these franchise owners? Which leads me to, speaking of questionable motives, the NFL. We have to talk about this. We have to talk about one Brian Flores, who is applying to multiple head coaching jobs after he was unceremoniously fired from the Miami Dolphins. Questionable circumstances there. But the main headline is that he has filed suit against the National Football League for unfair hiring practices, especially from the New York Giants. Now, you're probably asking yourself, what case does he have? How can he prove that someone discriminated against him in the hiring process? People hire who they want to hire, right? They know who they know. So, Bill Belichick, head coach of the New England Patriots, texted congratulations to Brian Flores for being hired as the coach of the New York Giants. A strange text, considering that Brian Flores had an interview with the New York Giants 3 days after that text. He hadn't interviewed for the job yet. So why would Bill Belichick tweet or text congratulations to him? Because Bill Belichick meant to text Brian Daboll, the former offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. Wow. Talk about a mistext there. So, yeah. So, not only did the New York Giants fully intend to hire Brian Daboll before they even interview Brian Flores, but it was wide enough knowledge to that Bill Belichick would text congratulations prematurely. So I understand Bill Belichick has ties with the Giants organization. I used to coach for them in the 80s and 90s, but that just shows you that at least one NFL franchise completely disregards the minority protocols for interviewing and evaluating talent. And so that's why Brian Flores is sacrificing his track as a head coach, his career, in order to rectify this. Now, what's going to happen? Okay, it's going to be a long process if this even gets to be adjudicated. I see the NFL settling a lot earlier than actually trying to play this out. They're going to compensate Flores for his suffering, if this has any legs, which I feel like it does. But hopefully what this does is call attention to just kind of the strange hirings here. Like, okay, let's just whip around the head coaching candidates here. People who have gotten hired. Josh McDaniels is now the head coach of the Raiders after basically a rather remarkable failure in Denver and being hired by the Indianapolis Colts 2 years ago and then backing out. You know, much to the chagrin of that Colts organization. I'm not saying he can't learn. I'm not saying he's not going to be a good coach. But I would say that I'd rather evaluate a fresh, young, black coach like an Eric Bieniemy. Although, you know, I don't know how well that would go over, given that the Chiefs are bitter rivals of the Raiders. But stranger things have happened. Much stranger things. You have the Jacksonville Jaguars situation, which is especially disappointing. because initially they announced that they were going to make former Jacksonville Jaguar quarterback Byron Leftwich a head coach. I felt like that was a great hire. Former player, knows the culture of the franchise, and can develop their future franchise quarterback, Trevor Lawrence. Seemed like a hire that made sense, especially after how Urban Meyer went, where you just hire a guy out of college, you know, who doesn't have the pulse of being on a staff, you know, organizing an NFL team, how to conduct yourself on and off the field. Jim Harbaugh, after basically recusing himself from the whole debacle in San Francisco, he became the Michigan head coach, his alma mater, to some lukewarm success. Great year this year. They beat Ohio State. You know, they were in there for the title contention, but came up short. But now he's the Minnesota head coach, reportedly. So this is strange given that Flores interviewed here too. But this guy, who, to his credit, he's been a head coach in the NFL, but he hasn't been for a while. He has not been in the mix in a while. So this feels like Urban Meyer 2.0 for me. Maybe he's not as brazen as Urban Meyer as far as his demeanor and decorum with players. But again, you're just hiring a guy with no pulse on what's going on in the league. And he's a big name, certainly a big name, you know, all pro as a player, captain comeback, remarkable player. And he had success with Colin Kaepernick and the 49ers, got him to a Super Bowl. But this just does not look good for black candidates, black coaching candidates. Houston Texans have a finalist for their head coaching job that has never coached in the NFL, has never coached in college, and was an offensive assistant in high school the last 2 years, an offensive assistant coach. Josh McCown, well-liked backup. I remember Dennis Green a few years ago singing his praises at a press conference of just how great a leader he is as a backup, preparing quarterbacks and just being an all-around team player and how he sees the game. Steve Smith Sr., wide receiver, former wide receiver for the Panthers, if you remember. He's saying this guy's praises too. So players like him, coaches like him, and obviously NFL execs like him. But again, the lack of qualifications is staggering. So to recap the situation with the NFL, Byron Leftwich, who was set to be the coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, as I mentioned earlier. Now the two sides are far apart on money and personnel. So the coach search has reopened there unexpectedly. So there now still is only one black head coach in the NFL in a league that is 70% black. A troubling trend continues, to say the least. And in the WNBA, this is an issue that has pervaded for years now, that the players are not getting their fair share. And the only way out, it seems, is that if the players take a stand, much to the risk of some of their careers, really, to get the league on the right track as far as profit sharing. So that's just my two cents on the subject. Like, share, subscribe. We'll try to have more conversations like this when they come up. I'll hop in right in the studio, right into the booth, and just put these out here as soon as I can. I'm Stevie Neal, and this has been Conversate. We talked about it.